Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a
We started to burn many things we found. This is Harvey Wasserman. We're back for another hour with the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I was going to do the show today on nuclear power. We're going to do that again next week. Talk about more of the nuclear power plants that are going down all over the country, all over the world. The massive decline and fall of atomic energy, the so-called peaceful atom, which has been such a catastrophic failure all over the world, putting us all in peril and in bankruptcy, let's put it that way. Today, though, we want to take a detour. My longtime co-conspirator, Bob Fitrakis, and I have conspired on a piece which is posted at freepress.org and should be up at some point at PRN, elsewhere around the Internet. We did it in part because we are approaching a referendum here in Ohio on the drug war. And we're going to be talking about the drug war. The title of our piece is Why the Drug War Has Been a 40-Year Lynching. Bob is a political scientist and one of the great experts on the drug war in this country, and we are actually going to be debating tonight. Bob and I have been writing together since the late 1980s. I don't think we've ever taken a divergent public stand on an issue, but in this case we're going to be talking about the pot referendum in Ohio, which, you know, Ohio has turned out to be such a quirky state in so many ways. We have this weird, strange outlier kind of governor, John Kasich. Both of us know him. Ohio, of course, we witnessed the theft of the 2004 election, the spread of electronic voting machines to the point where our elections are not even really to be considered as elections, more like C-elections. And we also have this really quirky, unique referendum on legalizing pot, or at least turning it over to a monopoly. So we're going to be discussing that. The title of our piece today, which is at freepress.org and elsewhere, is Why the Drug War Has Been a 40-Year Lynching. And it's based, again, with an Ohio connection, in part on the work of Michelle Alexander, who's a professor at in the law school at Ohio State University, who has written a very, very important book about the demographics of the drug war and how they have resulted in a what's called a new Jim Crow. Her book is called The New Jim Crow. It's a very important analysis, the first of its kind. And so we're going to take this hour to really go in depth on the political, cultural impacts of the drug war. Bob, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, so Bob, you've been an expert on the drug war for a long, long time. Let's start, just to be current, with what's happening in Ohio with the drug war. You and I are going to be discussing and even debating the proposition on the ballot this coming Tuesday in Ohio on the drug war. Can you describe, you know, this is, you couldn't make this one up. Can you describe Proposition 3 on the ballot and also Proposition 2 in Ohio and what exactly is being put forward in front of the voters? Because it's completely unique in the United States. And just tell us what these two propositions are about.
Well, issue two is a referendum. It was referred by the legislature, very conservative legislature in Ohio. Its main purpose was to destroy issue three, which is the one that would legalize marijuana. So issue two was rushed, written in a hurry, really is an attack on the entire citizens initiative process from the progressive era, and makes it virtually very difficult to get initiatives passed. I mean, one of the things, it essentially allows a board by a 3-2 vote to decide what's a monopoly and what's not. But it goes farther than that. It also prohibits any initiative from including taxes in their initiative proposal. For example, the issue three provides that 15% of gross, not net, not profit, gross revenue goes to taxes, which is one of the reasons a lot of people in Ohio want to legalize pot, not only to smoke it, but it really generates a lot of new taxes to aid the state. So that's issue
now,
two.
Bob, the taxes that are generated by, that would be generated by pot sales in Ohio, if this passes, are they earmarked for anything in particular, or do they just go into the general fund?
The taxes themselves, some of that is to go back, some of it will actually be local sales tax, which makes sense, the state and local governments. But some will go to state, some will go to the local governments. So this makes many of the growing regions very happy and very tolerant. Also, if you're going to have 1,158 retail outlets and, you know, dispensaries, so to speak, a lot of that money generated as well will go back to the state and the local area.
Well, let's discuss Proposition 3 in particular. The polls show it slightly ahead, but historically, referenda like this one on pot and other issues, if they're not, and other progressive issues, if they're not way, way ahead by election day in the polls, they tend to get defeated. I think the most recent poll showed this pot issue three, 55% support. But I think that generally has tended to be not enough because for some reason, of course, having maybe to do with electronic voting machines and other apparatus, the vote on these issues tends to swing to the right as the votes are actually counted. But tell us, Bob Fetrakis. Bob, you're a professor of political science at Columbia State Community College, author of many books, and the publisher of the Columbus Free Press and of the website freepress.org, where our article is posted. Tell us specifically the detail of Prop 3, because it is completely unique in the history of marijuana in anywhere, but certainly in the United States.
Well, it's the rise, as Rolling Stone has pointed out, ponytail weed culture versus the suits, the cannabis capitalists. Really, it's not a monopoly, although the state has written issue three to say it's a monopoly. But really it's an oligopoly. You've got 10 growers who theoretically will be competing against each other, you know, who've put up an estimated $20 million to legalize pot in Ohio. As you know, Harvey, the whole model is based on casino gambling was brought to Ohio the same way. It's written directly into the Constitution, as well as who can own the casino and what sites you can gamble on. This does the same thing for marijuana. There will be 10 sites, including one here in Licking County and one in Franklin County down there around Grove City. So these 10 sites will be the only places, and they can be up to 300,000 square feet. They can be the only places to grow pot in Ohio.
So there'll be 10
patches of land, 300,000 square feet each, where it will be legal to grow pot?
Some of them are a little bigger than that. Some are smaller. But they can grow up to 300,000 square feet, cultivate 300,000 square feet of pot.
Total or each spot?
Each of the 10, yes.
All right, so there'll be 10 patches in Ohio where you can grow pot for smoking as opposed to hemp, and they will be sanctioned, and they are specifically mentioned in the book, in the law?
The 10 sites are specifically stated as to where they are. Where
and
the pot can
them?
Be grown will be in the Constitution.
God, that's mind-boggling. And who owns them, right? Is the ownership spelled out?
Well, we know some of the people that, Nick Lachey, who used to be married to Jessica Simpson and had a reality show, the lead singer in the boy band, 98 Degrees. And if you also look, Oscar Robertson, I saw in a commercial today, the legendary basketball player, is one of the owners of a grow site.
Amazing. Just for the record, Oscar Robertson was an All-American guard at the University of Cincinnati, and then he won an NBA championship with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who was then named Lou Alcindor with the Milwaukee Bucks. That's the only championship the Bucks ever won. And now he lives in Ohio, and he is one of
the
owners.
Yeah, in the Cincinnati area. Yeah.
What's that?
In the Cincinnati area.
And he is one of the 10 owners of the 10, one of the owners of the 10, one of the 10 sites in Ohio where they're going to be growing pot.
Yeah, we just outed the guy in charge of this site in Franklin County. Franklin County weed is going to be grown by a guy essentially who got rich off building student apartments in central Ohio. So essentially, he's a real estate developer. And John Lasker, a writer from the Free Press, went and found out who he was. So essentially, a real estate developer will be selling us our pot in Franklin County. And there's also another interesting guy named Sir Alan Mooney, who was a offshore hedge fund operator who was brought to town, he tells me, by the Wolf family, the multimillionaire Wolf family that's probably worth a combined $1 billion. And he's a hedge fund operator, but he was knighted by the Pope, and he claims the Pope wants him to help with medical marijuana in Ohio. But he's got a history of making money. So the guy in Central Ohio's name's Rick Kirk. Rick Kirk. And he's done a variety of things. Again, he was injured while trying to make the Dallas Cowboys. This stuff can't be made up. So he went into a career in construction and founded Hallmark Campus Communities, headquartered at the Empire Building in downtown Columbus. And he's the guy who will own the massive indoor grow site in Grove City, which you can't make this up. That's on Seeds Road, Harvey. Seeds Road.
Seeds Road. Hemp Seeds Road. Is there, this guy, is he going to bring, if this passes, will he fly in the Pope to bless the fields of marijuana? Is that what's going to happen?
Who knows? The only reason we know is because we looked in the Securities and Exchange Commission and found he paid $4 million to get this grow site in Franklin County. So where Columbus is, out in the suburbs in Grove City.
But it's right in the heart of Franklin County, so of the state of Ohio, and so we will have a Pope-blessed pot field, within smoking distance of the state capitol. We're talking with Bob Fitrakis, my longtime co-conspirator, author of The piece we wrote today, drug war has been a 40-year lynching, and we're talking about the Prop 3 on the ballot this Tuesday to legalize pot in Ohio, but to be owned by or managed by or exploited by an oligarchy of 10, I'm sure there's more than 10 people, but centered on 10 grow sites in the state of Ohio, which are explicitly named in this. Is it a constitutional amendment, Bob?
Yes, it is. It's a constitutional amendment initiated by RO, by Responsible Ohio, really was put together by
Ohio.
Ian James. Yeah, and Ian James, he used to work for Vern Reif, the legendary, conservative Democratic pal who used to, run the state as Speaker of the House. He used to work there, but now he makes his money. Ian James, the guy who put this together, makes his money off the signature drive. He literally makes millions of dollars. He's one of the only progressive Democratic forces that can professionally go out and get these signatures. So he put it together. He's the same guy that brought the casinos to Ohio.
My God. So they did, of course, get what they need, about 500,000 signatures to get this on the ballot. And they spent the money. This was a high roller operation. I mean, if we had been really stoned to come up with a scenario like this one, where pot would be legalized or attempted to be legalized by a coalition of major capitalists, including the basketball player Oscar Robertson, that would set aside 10 spots in the state of Ohio and only 10 spots to grow pot on a large scale that they would then monopolize. Now, they would have dispensaries around the state that would sell the pot that they grow in the on these 10 sites. Is that correct? And who gets the licenses for the dispensaries, and how many would there be?
Well, as of today, Harvey, I believe there would be, it's based on a percentage of the population. So the calculation today would be 1,158 dispensaries in Ohio. So you're dividing the Ohio population, 10,000 people. So the dispensaries goes up as the population goes up. So today, as of today, best guess, 1,158 dispensaries throughout the state, and you need to apply for a license, and that will be handed out by essentially a cannabis control commission. There's like a cannabis control commission.
Looks like we lost Bob. I hope he'll call back. This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network. Why don't we take a short break
here? Hello, Harvey, are you
and,
there?
And as soon as Bob gets back on the cell phone, we'll continue with our discussion of Prop 3, the pot referendum in the state of Ohio.
Hello?
On Tuesday's ballot.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia, solartopia, solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a solartopia all over God's green world.
All right, we are back after a short break with Bob Petrakis here in Columbus, Ohio. We're both in Columbus. Bob, are you there with us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I guess your phone got a little stoned. You and I are about to go speak at Capital University.
I'm not even sure. Where am I speaking? Do you know what room we're in?
Yes, it's in the Student Union at Capital, where we go vote. It's near the tennis courts there. Yeah.
By the tennis courts, the Student Union. Okay.
Yeah, it's on Pleasant Ridge there. So,
all right.
And I'm, of course, just around the corner. And this is one of the few times, I can't remember any time, actually, when Bob Petraeus and I had disagreed, at least in public, but I am actually supporting Prop 3. I know that Cannabis Kenny is never going to forgive me, but my position on this is, it sucks that the corporations are going to come in and monopolize this thing. It's ridiculous, actually. It's a surreal conversation. I have to say, your description, which of course is dead accurate of what this proposition does, is it's otherworldly. I mean, we wouldn't have dreamed anything up like this when we were stoned. Okay, we're going to get 20 millionaires, and they're going to come in. We're going to spend $20 million. They're going to run TV ads, which have been running all over the airwaves here in Ohio, which I love to see, by the way, and including in the middle of the Republican debate. They're going to push legal pot. They're going to have people talking about how their kid has had epilepsy and suffers, and other people with medical problems that really need medical marijuana, how it's going to create jobs, how it's going to, stop having people getting arrested. And they're going to have these high tech, well-funded ads on the major media, and they're going to hope to win a referendum that will allow 300,000 square foot patches of pot to be grown around the state of Ohio. They will then be sold, that pot will be sold through about 1,100 or more dispensaries around the state, and it'll all be legal and it'll be taxed at 15%. Is that a basic outline of Prop 3, Bob Petraeus?
Yeah, pretty much. That's it.
So what were these guys smoking when they came up with this?
As Ellen Moody said, I'm not sure they were smoking anything, but other than, maybe some hemp paper, which they could use to turn into dollar bills. I mean, they're talking about initially a billion-dollar industry here.
Right, and they're investing 20, 30 million. Well, I don't know how much it costs them to get the signatures, but they're investing a fair amount of money in the media, obviously. Do you have any numbers as to how much they spent to
Estimates are they have a $20 million war chest for legalized marijuana, and the other side, the opposition, only has about $4 million. But they've got a well-known hardline prosecutor out of Cincinnati, former state treasurer Joe Dieter, who's arguing on their side. I mean, and they have the former Republican, and this guy's a Republican, and a former Republican attorney general, again, James Petro, arguing for it as well.
Jesus.
So it's a very strange coalition.
But, of course, the governor, and, you and I living in central Ohio, have talked to dozens of people who have told us that the governor, John Kasich, is a serious pothead. I mean, he's very publicly a big fan of the Grateful Dead. He even got himself thrown out of an attempt to get backstage with the Grateful Dead. And I have had any number of people tell me that the Republican governor of Ohio, John Kasich, who was just in the debate, wherever it was, in Boulder, Colorado, of all places, where pot is legal, of course, is a major pothead. And he, of course, on his high horse, is opposing this, right?
Sure. He's also running for president. And although Obama coming out and saying the idea was to puff it, and then he had smoked pot as well as doing other drugs, didn't seem to hurt them. Kasich has sort of gone back to the old style where you just flat out deny it, even though people all over say, well, that's not true. I was there.
Yeah. You know, there's no doubt in my mind that Kasich smoked pot, which is to a certain extent a frightening
reality. Yeah, the problem is
reality.
He just didn't smoke enough, Harvey, I think. Isn't that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, let's assume that he smoked a fair amount of pot and he did inhale, which Bill Clinton, you know, continues to deny. I mean, just one of the dumbest things ever said by any president, that he smoked pot and didn't inhale.
But he also said he didn't break any U.S. laws, and everyone said, okay, you smoked it in England, and he had to fess up.
Really? But the idea that I would say of the Republicans, except for Rand Paul, probably Kasich smoked the most, as you would guess. And for him, for him to come down with the – well, I bet Trump smoked pot, actually. But, you know, for him to come down with his horrible politics and still have been a pothead, that's kind of frightening to me. I mean, it proves, I guess, that marijuana does not guarantee you're going to be a good human being. What can I say? Talking about Patricus, their political professor at the Columbia State Community College, co-author with me, the author of the article now at cpress.org and hopefully at PRN, Why the Drug War Has Been a 40-Year Lynching. What do you think, Bob? Do you think this proposition is going to pass on Tuesday?
My prediction, it's going to go down primarily because, I mean, the president of Normal is on the record saying 40% of her organization is voting against it. So hard to believe Ohio gets a chance to legalize marijuana, and the largest pro-legalization group in America, 40% of their membership, is opposing the initiative.
Well, you know, it does allow individuals to raise up to 6 pot plants in their house. Is that correct?
4 flowering plants, but you can have other plants as long as they're not flowering. They're in the process of cultivation.
Oh, so they can, you can have mature plants and immature plants.
Yeah, 4 mature plants at any time.
And how many immature plants?
So 4 flowering. But you can't transport those outside your home. It's strictly homegrown.
You can grow pot in your house and roll it up and smoke it in your house, but you can't take it out of the house.
Right.
Jeez, who came up with that one?
Well, you know, they want the commercial sell to themselves.
Okay.
So, you know, they don't want, you know, you start to take that out of the house, next thing you know, you're distributing it to friends and you're cutting into their profit, Harvey.
Yeah, I guess. So what is the penalty if you raise pot in your house and take it out of the house? What do they do to you?
It depends on how much. It doesn't change the laws in Ohio. You know, so the, you know, whether it's under 1,000 grams, it's, you know, it's a misdemeanor. Over 2,000, it's a felony. So it depends on how much. As you know, Ohio has a large amount of pot. You know, you can legally grow up to 8 ounces in your house as long as you keep it in your house. You can have 8 ounces of your own home grow if you buy a $50 license.
That's the current law in Ohio.
Yeah.
That's how it stands now, without
right.
the referendum.
No, no, this is what, if you pass issue 3, you may grow up to 8 ounces legally.
Okay. Oh, that's cool. But you have to get a license to do that.
Yeah, a $50 license.
And the current law is that up to 100 grams in Ohio is a misdemeanor, right?
Yes, yes.
And what are the penalties for that?
Oh, very minor. There's no jail time.
But I assume a it's second offense there is.
Yeah, it's essentially decriminalized.
Okay.
I mean, you
and
can
I have
fine,
to tell you,
but...
I did meet at one of our pro-pot rallies. I met Richard Wolf, who is a member of the Wolf family. And he told me, maybe you can confirm or deny this story, he told me when the Ohio legislature decided it needed a law specifically against pot, they asked him how much should be the level in a misdemeanor. And he basically told me that he knew that if he gave it in ounces, they wouldn't go for it. So he came up with 100 grams, which is basically 4 ounces of pot. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's actually even, the 100 grams.
100 grams is
yeah,
about
so
4 ounces.
Yeah, so he's in a situation where, essentially, you can have it. And not only is that the misdemeanor decriminalized, is in order for it to be a felon, you have to have more than 8 ounces for it to go into the felony range.
Right, but he said, he was laughing about it.
He said he did give it to him in grams.
Right, he put it in grams because 4 ounces is a pretty fair load of pot. I mean, that's a good chunk of pot, and they do take it away from you, unfortunately, but nonetheless, in Ohio, I think, actually has the most liberal law in the country in terms of how much you can have and still have it be only a misdemeanor. And that's because they knew that Richard Wolf, a member of the billionaire Wolf family, was a pothead, and so they figured, well, as long as it's a rich guy, we can take our lead from him, and he basically got it up to 4 ounces, which is a pretty good chunk. So so under this proposed law, which is on the ballot, you can grow it in your house, but if you try and sell it, then you're subject to the current law.
Well, you can't transport it outside of your house. You can only grow it and use it in your house.
But up to 4 ounces, it's still only a misdemeanor.
No, it depends on how much you take it outside the house. If you got more than, it's actually illegal to transport it outside the house, and it's illegal as a misdemeanor to have more than 8 ounces. It's potentially a felony to distribute that stuff. Only the pot laws are still in effect. But it's actually an interesting law, Harvey, because they subtract the legal 8 ounces from the illegal excess you have over that, depending on where you are with the stuff and whether you're giving away or selling it. But clearly, if you're selling it, you're into a possible felony for drug distribution.
Okay, so that's the situation. Now, so we have this totally bizarre, I assume if they're successful here in Ohio, they're going to duplicate this elsewhere. Now, Ohio's always a test market anyway. And so they would probably go to other states.
That's the Rolling Stone thesis, is that you're seeing the future of... legalized marijuana right now is being voted on in Ohio.
I just absolutely do not. Well, now you mentioned this. In a previous conversation that you and I had before the show, how on earth do they think that they're going to limit? If you can go into one of 1,100 dispensaries and buy pot, how are they going to know, distinguish that from pot you raise or buy elsewhere? I mean, is the cop going to stop you with your pot and ask you for a sales slip from the dispensary? What are they going to do about that?
Well, this is the odd part. They're taking the Monsanto approach to soybeans. The legal pot, what is being called the Walmart weed from the 10 growers, the mass weed, is actually going to be DNA genetically stamped. So you better be able to prove that it's, your pot from a homegrown, or if you get caught with pot over the amount, it's still criminal, and they can tell whether and also that'll help them find out who's selling what to underage kids, right? You can only buy pot if issue three passes if you're 21 years of age or older.
Well, that part is fine with me, but are the cops going to be walking around with a barcode reader and they're gonna zap your pot and they'll know that it came from these?
Well, I think theoretically, but I don't see them being able to enforce it.
It's insane.
It's just going to be too much of a burden on the police.
So they're gonna have genetically modified Jesus. They're gonna genetically modified pot grown in the licensed ten licensed places around the state of Ohio. They're gonna have genetically modified pot, and they think that the police are gonna track when they bust you or when they inquire about your stash of pot. They're gonna check the genetic code of the pot to distinguish between what you grew at home and what you were supposed to buy from the monopoly?
Well, theoretically, that's what they can do. The other thing they can do is they can bring civil suit against you because they're constitutionally entitled to a monopoly, so they can sue you like Monsanto sues when they're modified soybeans, genetically modified, blow into a farmer's yard. They could actually sue you for essentially infringing in civil suit on their pot market.
Wow. Well, how much is that gonna, how much pot is that gonna involve?
I don't know. I would imagine it only makes sense to sue somebody if there's a huge, like a huge counterfeit pot market that's masquerading as legal pot. You know how these guys buy Coach purses and, other designer brands and put the fake labels on them? I'm thinking you'd have to have a fairly big operation before you got sued civilly.
Yeah, I mean, somebody walking around with pot, smoking a joint that doesn't have a genetically modified food in it, is not going to get sued by these guys, you would think.
Now, remember, you're not allowed to transport your homegrown pot outside your house. You can only consume it at your house.
I want to see the cop who's going to bust somebody with a joint that's not from Walmart. I mean, what are you going to say? You're under arrest because you're smoking pot that's not from these guys' fields? I mean, it's astounding that they think.
Well, I'm hoping we can train the police so they can puff it and know the difference between the Walmart and the local homegrown stuff.
Oh, God. This is probably the first radio show to really deal with this anywhere in detail. I don't think people have the slightest idea how completely whacked out this is. That's why I am willing to vote for it. I know that Kenny's going to be really pissed at me, but I just think it is so out there that it's just not going to work for these guys. And to me, it means that people aren't going to be getting busted for pot anymore. I mean, if this prevents one person from going to jail for pot in Ohio, then all these wacky monopoly guys are going to think they're going to do this. I just don't understand how they think it's going to work. To me, they're crazy. But, $20 million, I guess if you're poor, you're crazy. If you have $20 million, you're eccentric. So these guys are really eccentric as far as I'm concerned. I mean, how do you see this working? Do you think this would really work for them, that they would be able to monopolize pot in the state?
No, I mean, I suspect that once the genie's out of the bottle, how do you, just like in a lot of medical marijuana states, how do you know what's legal versus what's illegal?
I mean, an
expert like you, Harvey, would probably have to be brought in by the local police. So you can say, look, that's an old strain from college. That's Woody Hayes, Haze.
Right, we got the Buckeye brand of the Urban Meyer brand of pot. I mean, come on,
I just think it's so whacked out that, and you know, I just cannot imagine how they would. Now, the enforcers, I'm sure they'll make a ton of money on it. I think these guys at the stand that do make a lot of money. I just don't think how they're gonna. It's such a big market. I mean, they're assuming, and Ohio has 11 million people, so I'm sure they'll sell $1 billion worth of pot here eventually. There's pot sales in Colorado and Washington and now Oregon and Alaska and Washington D.C. They've all been very substantial. The tax revenues have been very substantial. There's no doubt about that. I think these guys will make money. I just don't think the monopoly side of it is going to work. I mean, which is fine with me. I mean, I think they're fooling themselves. I don't think I doubt they really. Well, who knows?
These are businessmen dealing with pot. But, you know, we do have plenty of people in this country who would do business and smoke pot. But I am not sure how much smoking marijuana really affects your politics. I guess there are plenty of gay right wingers. I'm sure there are plenty of pot
right wing potheads too. Yeah.
There seems to be a widespread use of pot across social and class lines. Remember, yeah. Newt Gingrich admitted to smoking it.
Yeah. John Kasich. You know, we are 99% sure, being Central Ohioans here, that our governor has smoked pot. And what percentage of people who followed the Grateful Dead did not smoke pot? And this guy is a flaming right-winger, horrible on the environment, bad on plenty of other stuff, and we are reasonably sure that he's a pothead. So,
he did draw the line on nitrous oxide.
that only his dentist knows that for sure. So,
that's true. He may have had legal nitrous oxide.
Yeah, right. Of course, when he went backpacking, he had nitrous on his backpack. But, you know, okay, so we're talking with Bob Fitrakis here, professor of political science at Columbia State Community College. And we do have an article out, Bob, and we've spent our many time here talking about this pot referendum. We do have an article out there, the 40-year, why the drug war has been a 40-year lynching. Tell us a bit about this article, which you and I wrote. What's the basic theme, and what's the impact of what it says?
Well, the overall theme, and again, you're good at the themes, Harvey, is essentially from my perspective as a political scientist, is that, look, the country enters a period of de-alignment, right? The Dixiecrats and George Wallace break off from the Democratic Party in 1968. Nixon's busy with his Southern strategy, Kevin Phillips. How can I get these Dixiecrats to come to the Republican Party? Which he does in 72. But one of the ways you do that, law and order, and of course, in 1970, spending $100 million on the DEA to have a drug war, and then the next year, 1971, pronouncing drugs public enemy number one. This accomplishes a variety of things, right? Number one, it earmarks the key constituencies most likely to vote against you, that being the black population, which, you know, the new Jim Crow and the drug war attacked that population, and also the new left and the counterculture, where pot was the drug of choice rather than alcohol. So it allows him to wage a war and disenfranchise hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of voters under the guise of law and order and morality. And that's the new Jim Crow. As you've pointed out, you know, the DEA has the function of the new terror group operating sort of as a KKK, but this time under government auspices and the label of law and order.
Right. And through your research, and also Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, Michelle Alexander being a professor at the law school here at Ohio State, but a very, very powerful and important book. And, you know, she really did start the dialogue on this. We have glided merrily along, even us progressives, and everybody knew there was a racial dimension to the drug war, but it did not really occur to us. It didn't really occur to me until I read her book how staggeringly important and what an impact it has had on American politics and the American culture. And what jumped out at me, and then you followed up with the research for the additional numbers, is that between 1980 and 2010, a 30-year period, 31 million people were arrested for drugs in this country. I mean, that is a staggering number. There are about 150 countries in the world that are 30 million people or less. I mean, there are only about 30 or 40 countries in the world that have more than 30 million people in them. And we, the DEA and the federal government and the state and local governments arrested 31 million people for drugs between 1980 and 2010. And you came up with another, what, 5 or 6 million between 2010 and 2015. Is that right?
Yeah. I just updated the numbers from the Uniform Crime Report after that.
So, not knowing exactly how many people were arrested for drugs between 1970 and 1979, we would guess probably between 500,000 and 1 million a year. So we can safely say that about 40 million people in this country from 1970 to 2015 have been arrested for drugs.
Yeah, I think that's the figure we came up through to 2014, about 40 million.
And then at least 40% of that has been African American.
Right?
Or more.
Yeah, it's you broke up there briefly.
Okay, so we would have to say that between 15 and 20 million black people, African Americans, have been arrested for drugs since 1970 in this country. And
the figures are high. You know, some years between 67 to 70% of all arrests were either Hispanic or African American. There's been a tremendous turn, you know, lately in the last decade or so towards arresting Hispanics as opposed to blacks. But usually, you know, blacks were arrested even though they smoked as much or less than the white suburban population. Their numbers, they were arrested at 3 to 5 times the rate, particularly, you know, the likelihood of a black male being arrested for a nonviolent crime was 1 in 3, while a white male was 1 in 17.
Bob, you're breaking up now, or you're gone. So Bob will call back in, I'm sure. So the bottom line is that in this article we've written, the drug war has been a 40-year lynching, makes the point that, first of all, $1 trillion has been spent on the drug war since 1970, and probably substantially more. 20 million black people have been essentially taken out of their communities and disenfranchised, deprived of the right to vote, and taken from their families and their communities, having a devastating impact on the African-American community, and that this has been calculated, that the drug war essentially used the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Administration, in much the same way that the Democratic Party in the South has used the Ku Klux Klan to suppress the black vote and black people in this country. Bob, are you back with us? Okay, so we're missing Bob Petrakis here. But I assume in New York we can still hear me, is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to continue talking and just plug Bob back in when he comes on. So essentially then, what we've learned from Michelle Alexander and from our independent research is that the drug war has had a very calculated and hugely important impact on the politics of America and on the elections. Because what happened is that in 1970, when Richard Nixon announced the drug war, he was in the middle of effecting the Southern Strategy. And the Southern Strategy, the importance of the Southern Strategy, the idea of the Southern Strategy, was that the Republican Party would now go after white voters in the South. Because the South, since Andrew Jackson, 1828, and the founding of the Democratic Party, has been dominated by racist white voters in the South. The Democratic Party, since 1828, was the party of race and slavery. And what happened then is that in the 1930s, and of course, those blacks that could vote, that weren't lynched or otherwise terrorized away from voting, they all voted Republican, because that was the party of Lincoln. Now, in the 1930s, the Democratic Party, with Franklin Roosevelt and the New Deal and his social programs, started to court the black vote to a certain extent, and blacks counterintuitively began to go over to the Democratic Party in the North, even though in the South they continued to be Republican, again, in those rare instances where they could vote, because the Democratic Party was still the slavery, the party of race and the Ku Klux Klan. But in the 1960s, when John Kennedy comes in, the Democratic Party as a whole begins to court Southern blacks. And they do this, especially in 1960. In the election between Richard Nixon and John Kennedy in 1960, Martin Luther King was put in jail just for his various demonstrations. And the black community went to Richard Nixon, who was the vice president, and asked him to help Martin get out of jail. And he did not return the phone calls. But Bobby Kennedy, Jack Kennedy's younger brother, and his our campaign manager, called Coretta Scott King. And Jeff, who was the senator from Massachusetts, got Martin out of jail. And at this point in time, the Democratic Party began to successfully court the black vote in the South. And that was followed by the Civil Rights Acts, and Jack Kennedy promoted, and then Lyndon Johnson got into law after Kennedy was murdered, and the Voting Acts law, and in 1964, the 24th Amendment, which banned the poll tax. And so by the end of the 60s, blacks, both in the North and the South, have migrated to the Democratic Party. And so in 1970, Nixon declares the drug war, and everybody thinks of it as, you know, well, God, there's so many other things going on, but Nixon was Nixon, and he goes after the drug war, and Elvis Presley comes to the White House, and they do this whole big deal about the drug war. And what people didn't realize was it was really going on, in addition to the drug war, when Nixon hated hippies and was very happy to have young people be put in jail who were smoking pot, or even if they weren't smoking pot. But what happens now is that with the drug war from 1970 to 2015, you put 20 million people, black people, in prison, to the extent that one-third of the black male population in the United States has done time in prison. It's a staggering number of people. And it guts the black community. It deprives millions of blacks, especially in the South, of the right to vote. And it is the second leg of Nixon's Southern Strategy, where, one, you court the racist white vote in the South, and they did this very consciously, to take Southern white racists away from the Democratic Party and bring them into the Republican Party. But then this, and everybody knew that was going on. But the second part of the strategy, which nobody talked about, was that the Republican Party was actively, through the drug war and through the Drug Enforcement Administration, disenfranchising 20 million black people. I mean, that's basically what they did. And so the reason that the South became solid Republican
And the reason that the Republican Party holds the Congress of the United States, both the House and the Senate, because of the solid South now being Republican, is that they simply arrested 20 million black people and put them in jail and stopped them from voting and stopped them from organizing in their communities. And that is the theme of our article today, why the drug war has been a 40-year lynching. And I don't think that people have even begun to deal with the true implications of what the drug war did to the politics of this country. Bob Fitricus, you back with us? No, it looks like we've lost Bob, and he's probably on his way to where we're going to be on this panel tonight about the drug war and about the proposition of legalizing pot in Ohio with a corporate monopoly. So I hope it'll be posted at PRN. It's posted at freepress.org. And people in this country really now have to come to grips with the reality of how racist the drug war has been and continues to be. And, of course, we still having hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people arrested in this country for pot, which is absolutely ridiculous, except as a political vehicle for prolonging the power of the Republican Party. But I got to say, and it's important to raise this before the end of the hour, that Bill Clinton prosecuted the drug war as well. He actually arrested more people in his 8 years than George W. Bush did afterwards for pot, more than Ronald Reagan did, to put it that way. And Clinton felt he needed to prove that he was tough on crime, tough on pot. He went out and made an example of Sister Souljah, this whole right-wing, racist kind of thing he did. And he also gutted the welfare system. And so we cannot say that the drug war has been specifically, exclusively, a province of the Republican Party. Obama has also not been great on the drug war. Here's a guy who specifically talked in his books and publicly about having not only smoked pot, but also having done cocaine. And yet the federal government under his Justice Administration with Eric Holder is extremely aggressive on prosecuting people for smoking pot in states where it was medically approved. In California, the federal government went in and busted people who had done all the paperwork with their state and local legal officials to have medical marijuana dispensaries. And in comes the federal government under Barack Obama, a self-proclaimed pot smoker, to bust people. And a lot of people have been busted in states. There are 20 states now in this country thereabouts where pot is legal either totally or for medical, just for medical purposes. And the feds continue to bust under the Obama administration. It's outrageous. And so while you can say, and it's definitely true, that the whole drug war was a conspiracy of the Republican Party to prevent black people from voting and to take the South away from the Democratic Party, the Democrats themselves have been pretty horrendous on the drug war. And as I say, Clinton did arrest under, there were more drug arrests under Clinton than there were under Reagan. So this is something we're going to have to deal with. Please do read our article at freepress.org and hopefully at prn.fn there under my Solotopia slot, why the drug war has been a 40-year lynching. I do want us all to we'll have to look closely at what happens in Ohio. Hopefully pot will be legalized, and we will be back next week. Thank you, Crew in New York, as always, and thank you, listeners. Get in touch with me at Solotopia at gmail.com, and we'll see you next week in Solotopia.